it's Matt taking over for Alex, who's busy out in the real world. I'm going to stick with the calls that were already lined up because, you know, in the past, I had been a caller many times to radio talk shows and other programs. And I can remember waiting on the phone for 45 minutes, an hour, and then just being dumped. So I'm not going to do that to starting with Seth in Arkansas. If you can put Seth on, I mean, I'll probably steer it around to what the topics of the day are, but I'd like to hear what some randos from the audience want to talk about also. So go ahead, Seth.
Yeah, let me preface what I'm about to say with the fact that I love this country and I love the philosophy of liberty more than anything. But when I see everything that's happening in Iran and in Ukraine, and I see, you know, the right hating Iran and the left, the left hates Russia, and, you know, they're trying to whip the citizenry into war fervor. And I'm a Christian man, and I almost feel obligated to pray for and cheer for the success of those two countries to stop this Epstein Empire Luciferian chaos that they're trying to implement and bring about World War III. Am I wrong for that?
Yeah, you know, I've many people in the past have noted this, that Americans are maybe the most brainwashed population in the world. And what's really worked very well is to for Americans to think, well, hey, you know, we have 10 different news stations, so it can't possibly be all propaganda. But what every time I hear people saying, for example, we've been at war with Iran for 47 years, or Iran is the leading global sponsor of terrorism, you know that this is like somebody in North Korea parroting back, you know, lines about America. And this, and as far as Russia goes, our lefties loved the communist Soviet Union. They had no problem with Russia when it was an atheistic communist country. And now that it's not, and it's actually swung far back to the to Orthodox Christianity, then now they really hate Russia, or they hate Russia again. The British have always had it in for Russia, going back, 200 years at least. The Crimean War was about Russia. World War II, World War I, they were our allies, but the British were always working against the Russians. Obviously, I'm not wasn't on the side of the communists during the Gulag period or anything like that, but Russia came out of 75 years of communism and went back to Christianity. They don't have, homosexual training in their schools. They don't allow it. This is why the left hates Russia now. Yeah, this is why the left hates Russia. So,
I was going to ask, why does it seem that Iran and Russia are being so reserved as to not get into a wider war with NATO in Ukraine, or as to not get into a wider war with Israel in Iran in the Middle East? It seems like both of those like they're behaving.
Well, Iran is winning. I mean, Iran is clearly winning. They've driven the Navy out of the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. So they've got the upper hand there. And they know that this isn't a war like Vietnam, where we can just basically bleed ourselves for a decade, because we're also bleeding the global economy, and Trump will be blamed for it. So we don't have an infinite time period, whereas Iran is 100% fuel and energy self-sufficient. It's now 100% water self-sufficient, and it's like 90% food self-sufficient. So you're not going to siege warfare Iran, whereas our own allies are going to be, hurt even worse than America before us. Okay, we're going to the break, and after the break, I'll take calls from Joe and Chris and Jeremy and Emmett, if you just hang on.
I put me spinach to the side, and I've been using Ultimate Power on the AlexJonesStore.com.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
All right, next, we've got Joe in Oregon, if you're still holding there.
Yeah, Matt, I'm still here. Hey, thank you for taking my call. And starting out with the usual plug, I've been buying Alex's products since his very first one, the first iodine one that came out just as Fukushima blew off. So a lot of gratitude for Alex for bringing, you know, the notion of supplements into my life, because it's made a really big deal for me, and I appreciate him for bringing that into really into more popular use.
Yeah, we're considering the uphill battle we have, consuming pollution, consuming all kind of rays and frequencies, and then also just consuming the garbage that's in so much of our food. You know, you can't do enough to protect yourself with the good stuff to try to counter all the bad stuff we're flooded with.
Yeah. So all of you audience people that are just catching a free ride, it's really, you know what, come up with $40 and plank it down and get something. Just do it. Anyhow, so I guess so. It was an open caller thing. So I thought I would call in and share my experiences most recently. I would say myself, I'm 50% redneck and 50% tree hugger. And I live in a very famous West Coast location that has been in the news lately. That's all I'll say. And so I when I came out for Trump, I lost every one of my liberal friends, and I was kind of big in the anarchist side of the anti-war leading up to that debacle. And so
you mean Iran war debacle? You mean, or
yeah, no, the debacle before that, the Iraq war debacle. Okay. And of course, I'm against anti-war Iran war debacle as well. But anyhow, so wherever I go, I'm kind of an outcast because I'm 50% redneck and I'm 50% liberal or tree hugger. And so I wanted to share an experience I had going to kind of one of those DEI meetings, you know, where they come in, they talk about racism and systematic racism, et cetera, et cetera.
What was the context of that? Is that work or a town thing or?
Well, so, and the context is what is really cool is because it's out of a volunteer opportunity. And so I'm a volunteer here in town, and they offered that 2-day course that was held at the big building in downtown wherever I live. And you had to go through 3 levels of security to get to it. And it was a really nice boardroom. And it was just,
I bet you had to show ID and prove who you were.
No, I didn't.
Unlike did you know, security, but no ID check.
Well, it's because the guy that set it up knew me by, you know, because he had interviewed me for this particular. And so he knew who I was, so he met us at the door, and he had the badges that got through the 3 levels of security.
I see.
So it turned out to be the usual, you know, anti-white BS. But since there was no human resources involved, and my paycheck wasn't on one, I was able to speak a little bit more freely. But I just like to kind of count what I did, and hopefully people will get a good laugh out of it. Also know that, you know, you can talk to the people you disagree with. And in the end, it actually had a pretty good ending. But so basically, the first half of the first day is how they built their definition of racism. It started out with bias and then opinion and something else. And then they had the card where they had the systemic, and then they had racism, right? And so they say that racism starts with a bias, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And one of the definitions for bias was only seeing the bad things of your opponent and refusing to acknowledge the good. And that was a bias. And so we go on, and they get into, well, this thing called whiteness. And at that point, I just politely raised my hands and I just stepped out. I just said, well, you know, the thing is that, you know, white people do a lot of good. And I listed a few, like the people that went out and died to free the slaves, you know, all those
sure.
Christian white people, you know, and then the freedom riders, because I could about the all those white people that died for to help out the black people.
Yeah, civil rights movement.
You know, and then I pointed out that the majority, in fact, all except for one of the actual people that were volunteers, you know, you have the staff, the paid staff. But I pointed out that of all the actual volunteers in the room, it was like 98% white. So anyhow, that kind of caused the kerfuffle. And she says, well, you know, we're just going to have to move on. And, you know, we'll have to, you know, let that be. And so it goes on, and they start talking about the next thing. It's like, racism, what can you do about racism? And they said, and the first thing is, if you hear something, you know, say something. And then they said, it's like the most powerful stopper of racism is when a similar colored person chastises that other person. And then, then I raised my hand, and I asked, so what do you do if it's like different races dropping, you know, the racism? For example, what is it if you hear a yellow woman dropping the N-bomb, or a red dude dropping the N-bomb four times in one sentence? And the whole room exploded.
A red dude, like, you out west, you mean Native American Indians?
Yeah. And so right. Well, those words are insulting. Those colors are insulting. So I can say black. And I said, yeah. And I said, so what about whiteness? You know, let's talk about, you know, your insulting whiteness thing. And I said, yeah, you know, and genuinely, I was insulted. What's the word that they use all the time? I was offended. And yeah. It was in my voice. And to her credit, yeah, the lady running it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you said you're half redneck and half tree hugger. Well, I'm kind of a tree hugger myself. I love trees. You know, I don't, I'm not for clear cutting, you know, entire counties and letting the dirt flow away. I'm not for clear cutting and building data centers and, you know, and feedlots. But, you know, so I think that we have a lot in common. And the fact that you would be comfortable enough to go there and maybe push back and change some minds a little bit, it shows that, you know, you are right, standing right over the fault line and, you know, trying to make a difference. So that's definitely good. And I think that maybe Tucker and some others have shown this, but we have a lot more in common with each other in the sense that, you know, we do love America. We don't like what's happening in a lot of ways. We don't want the wars. That doesn't mean we're for, like, giant corporations just stripping the land and planting crap GMOs everywhere. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a new populist coalition forming, and, you know, it's good to have you on team Alex Jones, because this is the cutting edge. But look, we got a couple more calls to go. So thanks for calling in, Joe in Oregon. Not sure where, but it sounds like it's probably an awesome place if you can survive all the liberal wokedom. So we got next Chris in California. If Chris is still hanging on.
Yeah, I'm here, Matt. Enjoy your show. I think you're a well-informed truth teller. I've been listening to Alex for probably three decades, and I kind of view the whole team as my personal consultant. So just mirroring what the other caller just said, I'm looking at my shelf in the bathroom.
You still there? Did we lose you? Did we lose Chris? That's a shame. I think Chris was looking at his shelf in the bathroom, and it's probably full of stuff from the Alex Jones store. It's good supplements. Sorry about that, Chris, after a long wait. We got Jeremy in Connecticut, and maybe we'll get Chris back, but if Jeremy in Connecticut is up, we'll go there.
Hey, Mike. Happy
Matt,
250th.
Matt.
I'm sorry, Matt.
Yeah. No,
I've been
it's okay.
For a long time. Matt, M-A-T-T, happy 250th.
Right. We're going to make it to 250. We make it to 250.
It's kind of sketchy, but.
Right.
My initial thing was something that Al was talking about like a bunch of segments ago. About our friends over there in the Levant. And he was saying how, like, people are hating on them because of the stuff they're doing. And from what I understand, like, they kind of are the masters of the victim role, and they kind of want that to hasten the return of the Moshiach.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty deep. It's a lot.
Like they say it. They've written it.
It's pretty deep. I mean, there's a lot of elements of PSYOP. And when Alex was talking about that playing the victim status and then going to the dark side and saying, you know, because I mean, I'm not a Kabbalah expert like Alex. I haven't read it, but when you start saying we're going to sanction doing dirty deeds on our side, you're flirting with Satan, saying, you know, because God loves us the most, we're allowed to do the dirty tricks, you know, exploding pagers that maybe a kid is going to open instead of dad, or, you know, just a policy of assassinations, which is rubbing off on us now, because, you know, that's how we started the February 28th war, was with sneak attacks during negotiations. You know, see you Monday, and then boom, blow up your whole building on Saturday, you know, including your family and neighbors. That is definitely something from our greatest ally, that they say. I don't like that. I consider that totally un-American. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, the kid thing is like, and that's what I'm kind of saying is like, and it actually makes me think about like the whole Sabbatai Zevi movement, like redemption through sin. Like they want, it's like the victim status. And I'm not going to elaborate on
that. They have to turn the whole world against them to allow. Yeah. It's their version of an end times Armageddon.
It's like they're running the same game.
When you say they, I mean, it's not all Israelis or Jews or you know, people that live in that country or around the world.
I have family.
I think partly it's because and some just like ordinary, mundane political things can have such big knock-on effects. The fact that Bibi Netanyahu could be facing prison is as a reason for continuing a war. Just imagine, you know, you're dropping, you know, like the other day, the mother of all bombs on Lebanon, and all of these wars, he has to keep a war going to stay out of jail. I mean, is that not a totally perverse incentive? You know, but he had to form a coalition with the Likud. With the most extreme right wingers, which means to keep them in the coalition, to keep himself in power, and to keep himself out of jail, he has to toss bones to those extreme radicals, you know, the end times Israelis, the coming of the Messiah Israelis, And I'm beyond pissed. And what it doesn't do any good to be pissed. But when you see people like Huckabee as the ambassador, and he's on board with all of this, you know, or even Hegseth, you know, these Third Temple lunatics, our foreign policy is partly being determined by, you know, lunatics who want to bring about Armageddon. That's a sobering thought. What else do you want to say there?
So I agree with you again. I think that him doing that is kind of like a political tactic that these guys use, and it's multiple agendas that they try to meet, and if they can't meet them all, then they've met a bunch of other ones. You know, like as a macro perspective, like connecting dots, the big picture, but there's the ancient picture there I was talking about, and yeah, like he's totally kind of stay out of jail or whatever. Like these guys do that politically. So that's fitting to something else, like because you were talking about something, the whole Russia thing, right? Which kind of seemed ball of wax, but I'm 46, and I grew up like hate Russia type of deal because of the Cold War,
right?
And like just there's a lot of aspects of it. Like I play hockey, you know. Like fast forward to now, like they're still like they won't let them in international tournaments and stuff. Like, dude, those guys didn't do nothing. You know, and it's like
I've been
subliminally taught to not like them, but it actually drew attention from me because I do hobby research and I've read books about, you know, Anthony Sutton's books and books about Stalin and Stalingrad and like World War II books and stuff. And like, I'm like, dude, what is up with it? Like, so anyways, that's just was my point is like, the subliminal conditioning of me as a 46-year-old through the times. And then I think we should be allies with them. If that could happen, I wish everybody could be cool. I wish everybody could
be get
cool.
along.
I don't know. Since the Garden of Eden, I guess we can't.
Like Rodney King said, why can't we all get along? You know, it's funny because so much of what we believe is purely propaganda and narrative driven. We were the enemy of the Russians for 75 years during the communist era, the Cold War. And we still are, even though they threw off communism and they've become much more religious than Western Europe or America in terms of belief in Orthodox Christianity. But when you look at other situations, during World War II, we had really incredibly harsh propaganda against Germans and the Japanese. You know, the Japanese were portrayed as like nearsighted monkeys, slanty eyes with little glasses, practically subhuman as you can get. And we actually, you know, fought a bloody war, virtually war of annihilation on the Pacific Islands, dropped atom bombs on their cities. 5 years later, they're our allies when we're fighting Korea. And all the, if you look at Hollywood, all the movies are, what a great time the GIs are having in Japan. The Japanese love us. Oh, the Japanese are great. It's like, wait a minute. 7 years ago, they were like these little yellow monkeys that were subhuman. Now they're our fun-loving geisha girl, sake-drinking buddies, learning baseball and loving Elvis Presley. Same thing with the Germans. The propaganda can just turn on a dime. So whenever I hear people say, oh, Iran's been our mortal enemy for 47 years, and they're the leading exporter of terrorism, it's like, that's not factually true. If anything, they were in Syria trying to fight ISIS. We were supporting ISIS. Israel and the USA were supporting ISIS. The guy Jolani, he's changed his name, but he'll always be Jolani, is, you know, chief number one head chopper. And he's our head chopper. He's visited Trump in the White House. And people just gloss over it like, oh, well, that's fine. That was then. This is now. But Iran is our eternal enemy. That's just a narrative, a psyop. Anyway, yeah, I wish that we would get over a lot of this and people would look deeper into these things. I think we got one more caller. If Emmett is still holding on, Emmett, you can have the end of the segment. You still there, Emmett?
Yeah, hey, Matt. Oh, I'm a little bit disappointed I didn't get to talk to Alex about this one, but I imagine you're a bit of a prepper like myself and might even be an owner, a proud owner of the Alexa Pure water filter that he promoted for many, many years. And, you know, every day I go through that, we call it the water ritual, and, you know, it's just become a part of our life now. But I have a little bit of constructive criticism for this new filter. I imagine you probably bought your water filter. You bought the filter holder, the stainless steel case, one time, right? Maybe twice. You might have two of them in your house. But why do salesmen sell water filters? To sell the filter inserts. And I know Alex has been saying that, you know, this first batch was like 2,000 units, and then maybe the next batch will be 5,000 units. But whoever's going to go about the business of selling water filters probably ought to make it possible to purchase just the filter inserts so that preppers like you and myself can purchase several units of them and have them on the back shelf for when the grid goes down and we can't rely on the mail to get us our next year's filter inserts. And anyway, it's just kind of ridiculous that I can't find filter inserts to purchase for this beautiful, wonderful, amazing new water filter that I'm looking forward to making a part of my daily routine. So it's not really criticism for Alex, but Bigly, what are you doing, guys? That's all.
Yeah, you know, just in terms of prepperdom, and you can find a lot of stuff online. You can create, I mean, if it's like a grid down type of a situation, supply chains are gone, it's possible to make a very good filter with charcoal that you create, you know, white sand that you dig up, pebbles, other things. One of the things that'd be harder to make would be the actual paper filters, like coffee filters you could buy in bulk now, even paper towels. But the fact that you can't, if in a dire situation you couldn't get, you know, the factory made filter inserts, there are ways to work around that, other than just, you know, drinking ditch water or whatever goo comes out of the pipes when the water system is only working intermittently. All right, on the other side of this break, I'm going to give my own opinion about what's happening with the Iran war, which is really one of the theaters of the world war that we're on, you know, why it's happening, the greater ramifications of Europe trying to bait Russia into a kinetic world war, what it all means and where it's going. So, see you on the other side.
But first, listen to me very carefully. I've got all these studies and articles out. Breastfeeding protects babies against ADHD, autism, low IQs. Brains up to one-third smaller if they never get mother's milk. Breastfeeding protects baby against risk of ADHD in another major study. New study strongly links Merck's Gardasil HPV vaccine to all sorts of neurological disorders. Why is corn syrup in so many American infant formulas? Some of them are up to 70%. So deadly, so bad. Plus synthetic vitamins and minerals, which are actually toxic. Adverse effects of infant formula made with corn syrup. Solids on the development of eating behaviors in Hispanic children. Definitely linked to the obesity and diabetes and all the rest of it. Corn syrup and formula, absolutely not safe. Well, what's the opposite of corn syrup and fake milk? It's colostrum. Notice hospitals tell people, oh, give your baby milk the first few weeks, you know, fake milk. Oh, don't worry about breastfeeding. And then the mother's milk never comes in. So then about half the mothers never have their milk come in. So they go right on the formula. Formula, high-tech sounding name. Ooh, trust the science. And all the studies are the brains are much smaller, lower IQs, all these serious problems. Because your brain's made out of fat mainly, and you need the mother's fat to do that. But the colostrum has all the mother's immunity. It's a natural vaccine. All these peptides, all these super nutrients. Well, I already have colostrum. I take some of it. My mom's really into it. One day I came over to her house and I gave her two canisters of it and told her, tell me what you think of this. But I forget about it. It's my dad's birthday last year. We're at an Italian restaurant. And she starts saying, and she never wants to be on air. She said, I'll go on air for this. She goes, look at my hair. He goes, it's gray. He has a lot of it, but it's gray. She goes, look, it's coming back in blonde. Look at this. Look at this. She goes, and look at David. He was totally bald. He's been on a few months. It's literally hairs coming in. And if you look it where it was already, it's coming in brown and it's gray here. This is insane. This is way better. I want more of that. I want more of that. I said, okay, I'll get it for you. You can buy it at alexjonesstore.com.
And a back problem that I've had since Alex was born, is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker.
And darker.
So you need to get it. It's buy one, get one free until tomorrow night, because I really didn't plug it. The sale launched Friday. Bovine colostrum, buy one, get one free right now. Never seen my mom on air before. She said, no, I'll do it. So I said, well, you say that on camera. So she repeated some of it on camera. You've been on colostrum now 2 months.
I know.
And we have the very best at thealchemistshore.com. And I'm serious. So, Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products. But this is the first one that I can go, whoa, it really.
You put that on.
Tell us what happened.
I have been on the colostrum for about 2 or 3 months, and a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been, and I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker. That's how good this is. And she's been on colostrum forever. She was a master swimmer and, you know, triathlete, and she's in super good shape at 76. But the point is that she swears by it, and she looked healthy before, but she looks even younger now, and she gobbles it. She takes way more than one scoop a day. We got it. You owe it to yourself. It's not just good for your hair and skin and all the rest of it. Imagine what it's doing internally. This is the superfood of superfood from the mama mammal to the baby. This is the Uber milk. Bovine colostrum, buy one, get one free right now. At thealexshowstore.com, and it funds the second American Revolution worldwide.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Okay, welcome back. I don't know if you're sick of hearing about Iran, but it's actually, you know, one of the major fault lines in the world right now that could be driving the entire world into a Great Depression. And if this happens, it's not just going to stop with, you know, a little bit higher gas prices in the U.S. or a little bit more expensive food. I think there will be severe social consequences all around the world. This is going to drive massive refugee flows. And as we've seen with many countries, they're never going to stop the refugee flow. Spain, for the foreseeable future, will just be an open door into Europe. You know, as many from Africa that can get into Spain are being herded straight across to get onto boats to come to the UK, to come to Ireland. For the time being, our southern border seems secure, but that can be gone the minute that Trump is gone. And it'll be another 10 or 20 million coming over in the first year. And now they're all going to be made citizens. So we are not out of the fire just because Trump has closed the southern border. That's really just a temporary band-aid in the overall picture. Now, we are going to face this economic crisis because what happened on February 28th wasn't just the beginning of a war and taken under very disgraceful and dishonorable terms, in that there were negotiations going on where we told people, meeting them in Oman, we'll see you in Geneva on Monday, and then we bombed them on Saturday using Palantir AI programs just to make the best guess that the AI could make. When would the most Iranian leaders be home? At what time should all the missiles hit simultaneously? That means one apartment might have a 70% chance he's there, one 90%. But the program said, 10:30 in the morning, that'll probably catch most of them. Doesn't matter who else is in the house. If the neighbor's house gets blown up, if the girls' school got blown up or the volleyball team got blown up. This is, for as an American, this is very disgraceful. This is for me, everything following is the fruit of the poison tree. You know, if we grew up thinking that the Japanese deserved Hiroshima because they started it at Pearl Harbor. At Pearl Harbor, they didn't also blow up a school, you know, with 180 girls in it that were the daughters of naval officers at Pearl Harbor. And, you know, so for me, nothing good will ever come out of this. But just in terms of the economics, it was a doomed project from the get-go. I'm continuing to be convinced that that Netanyahu, you know, basically psyoped Trump into doing this, saying, I'm going to do it anyway, then your bases will be hit, knowing that America will come in, knowing that we can't win. It's going to hurt America in the end, but that doesn't matter to Netanyahu and his clique. They don't care if America is hurt in the end. They don't care if the world is driven into a Great Depression. Their goal is to wreck Iran, to turn a nation of 92 million people into a failed state like Libya or Syria or Lebanon. And obviously this hasn't happened. Now, the oil stopped flowing, and as a result, we're seeing Trump panicking a little bit. 2 weeks ago, he signed the Memorandum of Understanding. At that time, he said he didn't want to become the next Herbert Hoover, that is, to be blamed for causing a depression. And Vance today and yesterday has been saying, well, we just want to get some oil flowing so we can restock. They're actually panicking because they're getting to the tank bottoms in a lot of countries. We're getting to the bottom of the salt caverns where the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is kept. And if it goes on for much longer, we won't be able to fake it. And Jesse Kelly, I think it was, he had a good analogy. He said, this is like you have a power outage and you're running your backup generator to keep the lights on in the house. So everything seems totally normal. The house has still got lights, air conditioning, television is working, but you're running out of cans in the garage to pour into that generator. That's what we've been doing, depleting the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is mostly going to the rest of the world to keep the price down. But it's a hell of a bet. It's a hell of a bet, you know, where we're painting ourselves into a corner. And I think that the Iranians understand this much better than most Americans, and they are willing to just drag this out in the sense that if we attack them again, it'll actually hurt us worse than them. They don't need the Strait of Hormuz open as much as the West needs it open. You know, Iran obviously doesn't need energy. The whole country has a natural gas pipe. I think like more than 90% of Iranian homes have natural gas, electricity. They're water self-sufficient. They're almost food self-sufficient. They're a continental power, so they can trade with Pakistan via the Caspian. They can trade with Russia and China. We're not going to starve them out. It's an ancient civilization. It'll probably be here long after our empire collapses. But on the other hand, our European allies and our Asian allies are in a very tough spot. The fact that on the best days recently since the MOU, maybe 30 or 40 ships have gotten out compared to the 130 before, it doesn't fix the problem. It's like if you were trapped in a car underwater, maybe you found another little air pocket. You know, you're not going to drown this minute. You found another air pocket up in another corner, but it doesn't fix the problem. And we're going to eventually be forced to accommodate the Iranians. You know, that the Memorandum of Understanding that Trump signed, it says in number one, point number one, if you can put that up on the screen, it's number three, it's the point number one memorandum. Three places in there, it talks about Lebanon. And the Iranians have been explicit over and over saying, we're not going to point 15 until the first points are nailed down to our satisfaction. This isn't a negotiation. You know, we sent Witkoff and Kushner to Qatar, and they're just not meeting anybody because the Iranians have said, this isn't a negotiation. You have to abide by the first five, or we don't even go to the next five. Number one is stop in Lebanon. Stop. Cease fire. And the more critical one, even than that, is number five. If that's that's also up there, that's on number four on the slides. Trump said, you know, I don't want to be the next Herbert Hoover. He signed the Memorandum of Understanding. He understands where this is going. But he signed this. It says the Islamic Republic of Iran will make the arrangements, period. Them, not us, not in negotiation. They mentioned that we'll have dialogue with Oman, which has the southern part of the Strait of Hormuz. Dialogue. We're in charge, but we'll listen to you. And we'll also consult with the other Gulf states. But we're in charge. Nowhere in there does it say that the U.S. Navy or the U.S. government has any part of the Strait of Hormuz. So if you just watch Fox News, God help you. But if you're following American media, it's being portrayed that Iran, just out of the blue, they said they were going to open the Strait of Hormuz, and now they're attacking ships. No, what Trump signed said, we're in charge of the Strait of Hormuz. And if you try to send ships through the South Channel without our permission, then we're going to hit them. And you say, Matt, well, that's why are you taking Iran's side? I'm not. I'm just saying this is the physical reality. If we could change it, we would have done it in the first 40 days of the kinetic phase of the war, or the first 100 days of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Then our Navy can't even get near it. Our Navy can't even get near it. If you can throw up slide number two, that shows the Persian Gulf. The U.S. Navy used to be headquartered in there in the middle of the Persian Gulf in Bahrain at 5th Fleet headquarters there. We're gone. Right before our sneak attack on February 28th, the last Navy ships snuck out of the Persian Gulf. They've been there since before World War II in the Persian Gulf. The U.S. Navy's had a presence, a big presence, you know, from the 50s onward, you know, with Aramco in Saudi Arabia and so forth. The U.S. Navy is gone from there. Why is it gone from there? Because our ships would not be safe anywhere near Iran. So anybody that says, Matt, it's against international law, they're not allowed to do it, that's fine. Have a debate at your college. You know, take it to the U.N., stand on the street corner with a sandwich board. Doesn't matter. If you can't open the Strait of Hormuz with your Navy, then you don't control it. Trump signed the document that basically says Iran controls it. He signed it. And it's not a negotiation. They are saying, if you don't abide by it, like trying to send ships through without our permission, we'll hit them. And what are you going to do about it? Hit us again? What good is that going to do? I still, in comments on X and even on Fox News all the time with people like Kane and Kellogg and Jim Hansen, and comments on X are just full of this. You can put up slide number one, the one that shows the black map of Iran. They say, finish the job. Finish the job. For 40 days, we threw like half of all of our Tomahawk missiles and JASSM missiles at them because we can't fly over Iran, right? We can only fly near Iran and launch standoff missiles at like, a million or a couple million a pop for one warhead. And we didn't stop them from closing the Strait of Hormuz. When people say finish the job, what does that mean? Iran is 10 times bigger than South Vietnam. It has six times its population. You know, in the 60s, we landed in Vietnam in basically around 65 when the actual Marines went ashore. Within 3 years, we had built up to over 500,000 troops in Vietnam. Remember, it's one-tenth the size of Iran, one-tenth. We controlled all the ports. We had complete air supremacy. You know, maybe a helicopter might get shot down by a machine gun, but none of our jets could be shot down by the South Vietnam, the Viet Cong or the North Vietnamese in South Vietnam. They had some SAM missiles around Hanoi when we were doing B-52 raids on the North Vietnam. But essentially, we controlled all of South Vietnam. We had 5,000 aircraft from helicopters on up parked in South Vietnam. 5,000 aircraft, 500,000 troops. And we lost the war. That little red section on the map that says Hormuz, the red lines, that's the size of South Vietnam. Iran has bigger mountains than Colorado and higher, like 4,000 feet higher than Colorado mountains, 6 times bigger than Colorado. That's Iran. 90 million people. And these idiots, they must have amnesia. We couldn't win in Vietnam. And people say, Matt, well, we were backstabbed by the lefties and the reporters and the politicians. How much longer would you have stayed in Vietnam? Would you have put in another 500,000? You know, the draft wasn't exactly popular. There were riots and demonstrations taking over cities in America. So how would we have won in Vietnam? Nuke Hanoi? What would we have done? Nuke the whole place? Turn it into a glass parking lot? Is that the solution? So even if we nuked Tehran and killed 10 million Iranians, that wouldn't open the Strait of Hormuz. That would make the diehards in that lower crescent even more determined to stop us forever. And yeah, it won't help the Iranian economy if the Strait of Hormuz is closed, but it will drag the entire world into a Great Depression. And it's a Great Depression that will be 100% blamed on Trump. You can throw up number 6. It's got like a graph there. So Trump said, I don't want to be Herbert Hoover. That's when I think that Vance and some people were trying to talk sense to him. This is going to end badly. You are going to be going down in history, not as the greatest president ever, as the worst president. The president that led to a global depression, to refugee flows like we've never seen before, entire countries in famine. And it'll all be, you know, that'll be put on you. I think that's when he signed the MOU. And he said, we've only got like 4 weeks of fuel left. And that's, but then he's back listening to Mark Levin and Bibi Netanyahu. Can you throw up that number 5, the America First? You know, I still don't understand. And I'm thinking possibly it really is a blackmail situation. We found out from Trump has made a couple billion, Trump and the Trump family, $1 billion on these worthless meme coins that people have sent him the money. Now they're worth nothing, but he's worth extra billions. So I don't think you can say anymore that it's Edelman's money that's got him in thrall. It's got to be more than that. He doesn't need any more money donors. You know, he's going to be the president for the next 2 years. He's financially secure until he's, you know, in his grave. So is his family. Supposedly, Barron is worth $150 million now. You know, it's really great knowing when when the Strait of Hormuz will be opened and closed, depending on insider knowledge, that to play that over each weekend. But I think that there must be a blackmail element to this. Nothing else makes sense. And I'm not saying that Trump is in the Epstein files, but certainly his close friends like Howard Lutnick are, and many of his donors. And that's the pressure, you know, what's in the Epstein files, if it was fully released, could destroy any relationship with Israel, turn people totally against Israel. I think whatever the FBI has in the Epstein files is the redacted portion. I'm sure that Mossad in Israel has the full information. And I think that they are still controlling Trump that way. Yep. If you can put up, number 8, I forget where I saw this. It's the this is the way that the rest of the world sees us now. When you know, you see these horrible pictures of Gaza or what's going on in Lebanon with entire villages being bombed with the biggest non-nuclear bombs ever made. We sent them the planes to drop the bombs. Those 2,000-pound bombs that turned Gaza into rubble were made in America. So this is a point that's not covered much in American media, but to the rest of the world, we're now joined at the hip. And I'm pretty sick of being that big dork with the mask on, having a little evil dwarf steer me around, you know, while I'm blindfolded. And whatever it takes, I'm ready to cut that relationship off completely. You know, earlier in the program, Alex was talking about, and he actually showed clips of this Professor Jiang. And as far as I'm concerned, the guy's a total psyop. You know, he was one of these YouTube sensations, calling himself Professor, came out of nowhere, tremendous number of hits and likes and views. And like all good psyops, you have to have a very good message at first. You know, you have to make people believe you're really a smart guy. That's so that when you start loading the message in with, you know, the intended, the payload of the message in with the stuff that you've been saying before to gain credibility, people will believe it. Him saying that we're going to put 600,000 troops into Iran, he is absolutely a psyop. In fact, if you look into it, he's not a professor. That's like me calling myself doctor. He's not a professor. He's a high school teacher in Beijing, China. Okay? It's a total psyop. It's a state-run total psyop. He speaks nice English, but getting one with Piers Morgan and saying we're preparing to put six. I heard another podcaster today saying, well, we're doing a kind of a coup in Iraq so that we can invade Iran through Iraq. Folks, this is all absolute nonsense. If you can put up number 7, it says U.S. bases. We used to have bases all around Iran. Now they're either empty or on the skeleton staff with their staff hiding out or moving in and running away before they risk being hit by missiles. We are no longer in a situation like we were in 1992 with Operation Desert Storm. In Desert Storm, we were able to load. Remember, looking at this map, that's when Saddam Hussein had come from Iraq and taken over Kuwait. All right. We spent most of a year bringing troops and tanks and artillery into ports there on the Persian Gulf in Saudi Arabia. And there was nothing Iraq could do about it. When the war went kinetic, they threw a couple of scuds our way, but they were very inaccurate with a small payload. Today, Iran can hit a point target, like to within 10 meters, anywhere out to Israel and anywhere inside of that arc, anywhere in Saudi Arabia, or almost all of Saudi Arabia, but the whole Persian Gulf. We are not able anymore to enforce our will in the Persian Gulf area. I doubt we will ever rebuild those bases that have been wrecked. You know, when you say, well, the base wasn't wrecked, you know, the important stuff was wrecked. There are something like 14 of these giant radars and satellite uplinks. The satellite uplinks have a huge dish, like a 25-meter dish inside of a dome that allows the ground station to have an immense bandwidth to a constellation of satellites that are constantly passing over. Think of it as like super mega Starlink, right, where one American satellite is passing over with a huge bandwidth capability, and that uplink is what allows the information, for example, from the giant radar that's at the same base. The giant radar can peer way into Iran and pick up, for example, missiles going to Israel before they've even crossed the Persian Gulf. That's the important eyeball, that giant radar. And the giant satellite uplink is what feeds that information up to our constellation of satellites and down to the THAAD launchers and Patriot launchers in Israel or in Qatar or wherever. The Iranians were able to take out those eyes, like, you know, the Cyclops, the big monster with one eyeball, like somebody firing an arrow straight into it. So imagine the utility ratio of firing a $30,000 slow-moving, low-to-the-ground Shahed drone at a billion-dollar radar or a billion-dollar mega-satellite uplink and destroying it. And those were the keys to our defense. They couldn't be defended. Now they're blind, which means that if a missile's going to Israel, the warning time is cut way down. The THAAD launchers and Patriot launchers, they only have a satellite, almost like a tactical satellite, to lock on to a threat that's already been identified before coming over, so that the THAAD or the Patriot, for example, in Israel, is not scanning the whole sky. It's scanning right to where it expects that missile, the Iranian missile, to be coming in. It can't now because those giant satellites, uplinks, and the giant radars were destroyed by Iran. This is a huge strategic loss. I mean, we have absolutely been driven out of the area, and I don't think we'll ever be coming back. Well, I'm running out of time. I'm sorry I didn't get to cover the birthright citizenship issue, but we'll see you next time. And, you know, you can always buy my great books. And we'll see you on the internet.
About to tell you a great truth. But like most great truths, everybody already knows it. But do you act on it? How you look on the outside is a reflection of what's happening on the inside. If you see your neighbor and they look all kind of green or stumbling around sweating, you're like, hey, Bob, are you sick? Yeah, I got the flu. If somebody's glowing and happy and looks super healthy, you ask them, hey, what are you doing to be so healthy? Ladies and gentlemen, bovine colostrum is known for decades by women and loved. And, you know, doctors push it because it works. And nutritionists for your hair, your skin, your nails. But that's the outside. Imagine what it's doing on the inside. That's where it has its most important effect, is in your guts, your immune system, and your organs. The Alex Jones Store's bovine colostrum is a private label of the top brand in the country. It's up to 4 times stronger than leading competitors, and it's the strongest out there and the highest rated. It gives you all of the key ingredients at the highest quality level that hasn't been pasteurized, so it hasn't been heated up to ruin the cofactors that are in it. But as quickly as I can, I want to just read you some of what is in this bovine colostrum and announce to you that we don't just have the powder now. We have these naturally flavored, amazing grape gummies that are even more concentrated than the powder. A 1 month supply, 2 gummies a day, and it doesn't just do your hair, nails, and skin. That's the outward thing it does. It's what it does to your gut and your organs. The gummy format also habituates you because it tastes so good to remember to take it, and kids love it as well. 600 milligrams per serving, every 2 gummies, a clinically meaningful dose, not a token amount, but a strong dose that will really give you great results. So get the powder and get the grape gummies right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air. Be healthier. Have a better life. A true 360 win. Thank you for your support. And the gummies are discounted for a limited time out of the gates. Again, at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.